नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। This evening we're reading from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 18, entitled The Perfection of Renunciation, text number 56. Sarva karmani api sada kurvano madhyapashrayaha mat prasadad avapnoti shasvatam padam avyayam. Sarva karmanya pisada, sarva karmanya pisada, kurvano madhyapasraya, kurvano madhyapasraya, mat prasada davapnoti, mat prasada davapnoti, shasvatam padam avyayam, shasvatam padam avyayam, sarva karmani api sada, kurvano madhyapasraya, mat prasada davapnoti, shasvatam padam avyayam. Pa, all karmani, activities, api, although, sada, always, kurvanaha, performing, madhyapasrayaha, under my protection, mat prasadat, by my mercy, avapnoti, one achieves, shasvatam, the eternal, padam, abode, avyayam, imperishable. Translation. Though engaged in all kinds of activities, my pure devotee, under my protection, reaches the eternal and imperishable abode by my grace. Responsively, please repeat. Though engaged in all kinds of activities, my pure devotee, under my protection, reaches the eternal and imperishable abode by my grace. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The word madhyapashrayaha means under the protection of the Supreme Lord. To be free from material contamination, a pure devotee acts under the direction of the Supreme Lord or his representative, the spiritual master. There is no time limitation for a pure devotee. He is always 24 hours a day, 100% engaged in activities under the direction of the Supreme Lord. To a devotee who is thus engaged in Krishna consciousness, the Lord is very, very kind. In spite of all difficulties, he is eventually placed in the transcendental abode, or Krishna Loka. He is guaranteed entrance there. There is no doubt about it. In that supreme abode, there is no change. Everything is eternal, imperishable, and full of knowledge. Sarva karmani api sada kurvano madhyapasraya mat prasadad vapnoti shasvatam padam avyayam. The next verse is also the same, pretty much the same idea. Chetasa sarva karmani mayi sanyasya matpara buddhiyogam upasritya machita satatam bhava. In all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. And Prabhupada says in the purport, when one acts in Krishna consciousness, he does not act as the master of the world. Just like a servant, one should act fully under the direction of the Supreme Lord. A servant has no individual independence. He acts only on the order of the master. A servant acting on behalf of the Supreme Master is unaffected by profit and loss. He simply discharges his duty faithfully in terms of the order of the Lord. Now, one may argue that Arjuna was acting under the personal direction of Krishna, but when Krishna is not present, how should one act? If one acts according to the direction of Krishna in this book, as well as under the guidance of the representative of Krishna, then the result will be the same. The Sanskrit word matparaha is very important in this verse. It indicates that one has no goal in life save and except acting in Krishna consciousness, just to satisfy Krishna. And while working in that way, one should think of Krishna only. I have been appointed to discharge this particular duty by Krishna. And while, pardon me, the context here, syntax. And while working in that way, one should think of Krishna only, quote, I have been appointed to discharge this particular duty by Krishna, end quote. While acting in such a way, one naturally has to think of Krishna. This is perfect Krishna consciousness. One should, however, note that after doing something whimsically, he should not offer the result to the Supreme Lord. That sort of duty is not in the devotional service of Krishna consciousness. Once you act according to the order of Krishna, this is a very important point. That order of Krishna comes through disciplic succession from the bona fide spiritual master. Therefore, the spiritual master's order should be taken as the prime duty of life. If one gets a bona fide spiritual master and acts according to his direction, then one's perfection of life in Krishna consciousness is guaranteed. Chetasa sarva karmani mayi sanyasya matpara buddhi yogam upasritya machita satatam bhava. In all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. And the previous verse, though engaged in all kinds of activities, my pure devotee under my protection reaches the eternal and imperishable abode by my grace. So, here we are talking about bhakti yoga. The person who is a monist or an impersonalist, he has no such ashraya or shelter. Someone who is endeavoring to understand the absolute truth by his own power, by meditation, by philosophical speculation, etc. Especially if his goal is to merge with Krishna, not to surrender to Krishna, then Krishna is certainly not going to help him. And here, Prabhupada stresses that the devotee, the bhakta, is always under Krishna's lotus feet. It is stated in another verse, Api Chet Sudracharo Bhajate Mamananyabhak Sadureva Samantavya Samyagya Vasito Hisaha, that Sadureva Samantavya. Even if my devotee has trouble on the path of spiritual life, trying to follow a high standard of spiritual life, and has difficulty, I will protect his devotional service, and he will be successful. And Prabhupada, in the purport says, in spite of all difficulties, he is eventually placed in the transcendental abode, or Krishna Loka. So, we're being asked to do something very big. We're being asked, at least theoretically, to expand time. In other words, for most people, they see life as the time that they get between birth and death. You have one life, and you have to complete everything within one life. And of course, there are even some religious people who say that if you don't achieve love of God in this lifetime, then you are condemned to hell perpetually, eternally. So, for various reasons, this is not, it's not a very intelligent conclusion, because then naturally the question comes, what about a child? Where does a child go if he dies young? He didn't love God, but he didn't commit any sin. So one wonders, where does a child go, heaven or hell? If you say that the child goes to heaven, then naturally the inclination would be to kill all the children. Let them go directly to heaven. Quickly. Why let them grow up? So we're being asked to see that we have as much time as it takes for us to surrender to Krishna. If it takes you one lifetime, that's best. Rebirth and going through old age, disease, and death, you're taking a risk. And it's also more suffering. You're taking a risk that you might not remember Krishna in your next birth. You might not get an opportunity. But Krishna is saying here that his devotee, someone who takes up devotional service, he will eventually be successful. So if we have that kind of confidence, then we can accept that Krishna is our protector, that Krishna will fulfill his promise. And another point is that our perfection, Krishna says, mat prasadat, There's so many things that we are advised to do. We're advised to chant japa. We're advised to attend morning programs. We're advised to follow regulative principles. We're advised to engage in work, giving the fruits to Krishna. We're advised to use material things in Krishna's service. We're advised to do so many things for our spiritual salvation. And someone may think, well, if I just chant, and there are even, in the Vedas, there are even some statements that if you chant 1,000,000 Gayatris, then you get liberation. You know, at 999,000, you got to chant one more to get liberation, 1,000,000. Or there are many things like that. If you chant Nisringa prayers so many times or whatever, suggesting that maybe there's some mechanical way that you can achieve perfection. Really? Here Krishna's saying that it is only by His causeless mercy that we can attain perfection. And again, Prabhupada said there's no time limitation for a pure devotee. So if we sincerely endeavor and pray to the Lord for His mercy, we may be unqualified. There are 6 symptoms of surrender. Who knows what those 6 symptoms are? Joyful? Well, that's a symptom of a devotee who's making advancement that becomes joyful. That's true. But in the Nectar of Devotion, it specifically mentions 6, calls them characteristics or symptoms of surrender to Krishna, or 6 attitudes that one should have. One should always feel himself fully dependent upon Krishna. One should always expect the mercy of Krishna. One should hope against hope. In other words, there's no hope that a dirty-hearted person like me can achieve Krishna's mercy. But still I'm hoping, even though there's no hope. One should feel himself meek and humble. One should accept everything favorable and one should reject everything unfavorable. I think those are 2 that overrule all the others. There's only 2 rules: accept everything favorable and reject everything unfavorable. I don't think that's part of the 6. There's Very good. That's a nice one. We came here too. One should think of the Lord as his only protector. One should feel dependent on the Lord. One should be very meek and humble. One should hope against hope. One should always expect. I'm doing devotional service. Krishna says he'll give his mercy. I expect it. It should come. So such a person is guaranteed entrance, and there's no doubt about it. And not only does Prabhupada say this over and over again, but Krishna also says the same thing, asangshayam, there's no doubt about it. So at least they're very confident, all the great acharyas are confident. A devotee may engage in many kinds of activities. It's, again, the Durdan Tendriya Kala Sarpa, like the serpent whose teeth are broken. Even though action can be the source of bondage, and Mayavadis try to stop all activity, but the devotee knows how to Padma Patram Ivambasa. He knows how to be like the lotus leaf, which is in the water but not touched by the water. He knows how to never incur sin, even though doing so many varieties of activities. And in this next verse in the purport, Prabhupada clarifies how we can become more sure of what we're doing. Of course, Arjuna heard directly from Krishna, and that sometimes that objection is raised that Krishna told Arjuna to kill, and he had God standing right there, so he was very sure that he should fight and kill. But we don't have such facility. We don't have the opportunity where God is standing right before us. So how can we be sure that what we're doing is the right thing to do? And, of course, Prabhupada says that we have to follow Krishna's representative, Sadhu and Shastra, Sadhu Guru and Shastra. And perhaps, and Prabhupada was in the second verse in the purport, he says that a devotee thinks, I have been appointed to discharge this particular duty by Krishna. This type of thinking we should try to practice. When we have some work, we should be thinking, is this what my spiritual master in Krishna would want me to be doing at this moment, at this time? Is this the right thing to be doing? We should have the confidence. We'll get confidence when we think that I'm doing this under Krishna's instruction. Therefore, I have nothing to gain or lose from this. There's no profit or loss motive. My only duty is to satisfy Krishna. Service is constitutional. You have to serve someone. In the end, if you say that, no, I won't serve, there are belligerent people who will insist, I won't serve the government, I won't serve my family. But in the end, you're forced to serve your senses. You're forced to serve your mind. If you say, I don't serve my senses or my mind, you're forced to serve time. Time says, you get old, and you get old. Time says, you die. You can't say, no, I refuse. You follow. You die. So you're forced to serve. You can't avoid it. So given that prospect, given that inevitability that I have to serve, we have to figure out who we are going to serve. Of course, obviously, we want to serve the greatest, the Supreme Being, Krishna, God. But in the absence, because our senses are not accustomed to communicating directly with God, although it is possible, there's nothing separating us from Krishna. It's not like, you know, from here to the coast is, you know, 2.5 hours drive or something like that. You want to go there? Okay. That's where everybody else is tonight. Anyway. You know, it's not like there's a distance between us and Krishna. He's so close. Tad ejati, tannaijati, tad dure, tad vantike, tad antarasya sarvasya, tad usarvasya syabhayata. The Supreme Lord walks, tad ejati, tad naijati. Supreme Lord walks, but he does not walk. Appears like a contradiction, but it's not a contradiction. Krishna, in one sense, is, he explains in the next line, he's within everything. He's very far away, and yet he's very near as well. He's within everything, and yet he's outside of everything. So Krishna has his threefold bending form of Shyam Sundar, Tribhanga Lalita. Tribhanga means threefold bending form. And of course he walks, he runs, he talks, he does everything. He wrestles, he kills demons, he does everything. And yet at the same time, the same person is Mayata Tamidam Sarvam Jagad Avyakta Murtina. In his impersonal form, he's spread everywhere in the universe. So Tadure, he's very far away, but he's also very, very close to us. And we just, although he's so close, there's one nice film called The Spotless Purana. I don't know if any of you have seen that video, but it's how BBT publishes the books. And there's one part of that video where they have Srila Prabhupada dictating on a tape. And he's quoting Kunti Devi. And he's saying on the dictaphone that the most wonderful thing to Kunti is that although Krishna is within everything, at the same time he's outside of everything. So this is, it's something very wonderful, and if we could just learn how, by developing a little faith and love in Krishna, how to communicate with him, that would be very nice. That's our goal. But we can't, so we have to resort to communicating with Krishna's devotees. And especially amongst all the devotees, we have to accept Guru, Siksha and Diksha. Diksha Guru may be our Siksha Guru, or Diksha may be one of our Siksha Gurus, and we may have other Siksha Gurus, but we have to learn how to see through the eyes of Scripture and through the guidance, the consultation of other devotees. And when we learn to do that, then we'll get the confidence that the work that I'm doing now has been given to me by Krishna. And then it'll be very natural to think of Krishna. Then it won't be a struggle at all. Just acting capriciously, whimsically, that's not satisfying. That won't lead to perfection. It's a very important point. We have to learn how to act according to the instructions of Krishna and his representatives. And if we don't do that, then practically we're not in Krishna consciousness. We're in our own conception of Krishna consciousness. You have to serve someone. Even the external activities of devotional service. In other words, Chaitanya Charitamrita talks about a Kali Chela as a person who he wears tilak. Chela means a disciple. And Kali means, of course, Durga. He's actually a disciple of Maya. But he wears tilak, he wears neck beads, he has japa beads, wears dhoti kurta, but he's not acting properly according to sadhu, guru, and shastra. He doesn't have an authority who's guiding him, whether it be his spiritual master, or even the temple president who's the representative of his spiritual master, or the representative of the GBC, or whatever. We have to serve someone. You have to serve someone eventually. So, it's no matter who you try to serve, there's bound to be, we were reading the other day, every endeavor is covered by fault. Just like smoke. Fire is covered by smoke. So you have to serve someone, and maybe there'll be defects here and there. The best thing is to try to serve the best person. Then at least you know that you have a hope. Otherwise, without that, there's no hope of perfection. So this is a key part of the process of Krishna consciousness, to depend upon Krishna, to work under Krishna's protection, and by that, to be fully conscious of Krishna. In the next verses, Krishna talks more about obstacles to devotional service, and some of the major obstacles and how to avoid them. But I'll stop here for now. Are there any questions? Comments? Yes. To have faith in the authorities? Regain the faith? Well, as I said, you have to serve someone. Someone's going to be your authority. Now, I've had a lot of bad experience with my mind. Following my mind, I get myself into all kinds of trouble. I've had bad experience with following Jean Chrétien, Prime Minister of Canada, or Bill Clinton, or Slobodan Milosevic. Some authority you have to follow. I'm glad I didn't follow my father. I had, you know, it would have been a terrible experience. I think we have to... There's two things that you can do. There's a book called How to Manage Your Boss. How to control your boss. How to manage your boss. Or let's say an even better example than that is this one management consultant that I know. He talks about a case where there was a boss of a company who was very autocratic and very heavy with his employees. And he would treat people, he would insult people as being stupid and foolish, and he would take all the decisions himself, and nobody liked him. He was successful, he was good, but nobody liked him. But one man who joined the company, he took the trouble to actually work with that man in a very positive way. He disregarded his negative side, and whenever he got instructions from the man would, you know, he would get a report from someone and he would just either reject it or say how foolish it was. This man would be asked to get a report, and he would not only get the report, but he would get extra information. And then he would even give recommendations based upon the extra information and the report he was asked for. So then the boss kind of liked that. And he got so used to this man that he started to depend on him. And then some of the employees became envious in this man, but this man started to work with the employees also and dealing with them in a very positive and proactive way. So that pretty soon he was like indispensable in the company. In other words, what I'm saying is sometimes you can work with your leaders, understand the difficulty they have, and try to work around their faults and problems and still be a good follower. Or if you can't do that, then you can go somewhere else. Find someone that you can follow. Or even find another leader, either higher or lower than that one, who you can have faith in. Because you always have to have somebody, just by the process, like for example, accepting a guru. I didn't come to Krishna consciousness to surrender to some ordinary person who, you know, a few years back was doing the same things I was doing or whatever. I came because I wanted to surrender to Krishna. But Krishna's first instruction to me is, go find my devotee. Then we'll talk. Then, you know, his first instruction, he doesn't say, okay, you want to love me, let's have a relationship. He says, if you want to love me, then you have to develop a relationship with my devotee. So I'm doing that because Krishna tells me to do it. And I understand that. And if I have a nice relationship with somebody that I can respect, it's very good. It's all positive. But still, the point remains that my goal is Krishna and I'm following Krishna's instruction. So, institutions are hellish. We talked about this the other day. Institutionalized religion, you know, throw it out the window. People say that. But you need institutions. I don't go to my job and say, look, let's close down Ericsson. I don't think, you know, we want to sell mobile phones, but having institutions is bad. There's so much politics. Let's just, everybody can make their own little phone in their backyard and that won't work. The government won't, is an institution. There's so much corruption in the government. But you need to have a government so that you have streetlights that go on at 8 o'clock in the evening. So you have police that, at least a blind uncle is better than no uncle. You have to have some institution. And we have to have an institution, and there have to be leaders of the institution. And the only thing we can do is set a good example and try to make the institution more Krishna conscious so that the leaders who we choose to be leaders will be more Krishna conscious leaders. But to reject something completely because there's some fault there, that's not a solution. Is that helpful, or it still didn't answer your question, though? That's called pariksha. Just be humble about it. Don't. You know, find out the knowledge you need to find out to be satisfied. They're asking you for a big thing. You know, you're supposed to accept some man as God's representative, as good as God. The first year or so, Prabhupada told his disciples in no uncertain terms, he just over and over again. Anyone who says he is God, G-O-D, he's actually dog, D-O-G. Guru will never say he's God, blah, blah. He went on and on and on. Then it came time for the first initiation, and the devotees weren't really sure. What's initiation, Prabhupada? And Prabhupada said, initiation means that you agree to accept the spiritual master as God. And then he turned around and walked out of the room. They were all shocked. Didn't know what to think. And then later on he explained, God's representative, or someone who's acting as a via media, an instrument. The deities are saguna. They have material qualities. This is Krishna. It's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But if there's a fire, the deities may burn down. Did God burn down? No. They have material qualities. If the deity breaks an arm or something, we had our deities in Bombay, the leg was broken. We had to replace the deity. We didn't reject the principle of worshiping the deities. The deities still reflect Lord Chaitanya. For one who has the eyes, in the right consciousness, you see... How does that? There's a verse. I forget the Sanskrit, but the essence is that a pure devotee of the Lord does not exactly see the material world. Although he sees the material world, but he doesn't exactly see the material world, but he sees the form of Krishna everywhere, within everything. So, if you're looking to find Krishna, if you have the right balance of mind, you'll know how to use the facilities offered to help you develop your Krishna consciousness. It's like you go to a gymnasium, and there's a bicycle there, and a treadmill, and a this and a that. And they're all just instruments there for you to tone up your body muscles and heart rate and this and that. And if you use them, then you'll get a result. If you don't use them, then you remain a flabby fatty, whatever. So the temple is offering you facilities, and you have to use your intelligence and discretion. It may not be right for you to run on the treadmill. Maybe you have a heart condition or something. Maybe you need to walk only. Maybe you know, you need to just, maybe you have to have enthusiasm to serve the temple authorities or the spiritual leaders, but you have to do so cautiously until you build up stronger faith. It's not that you avoid taking up the process, but you have a type of discriminating mind that doesn't allow you to just jump in blindly. But you still should follow the process. Just proceed cautiously. Did I miss again? That's ideal for 1 year, right? That's ideal. Quit your job and follow Dhanavir around, and no problem. I recommend it. Probably be great traveling. It's not always possible in today's world. That's why we don't stress complete dependence only on a Diksha Guru. Siksha Guru is also an equal manifestation of God's mercy. And there may be devotees who live with you right in the temple, who live in your temple, in your area, who you can closely associate with and see the quality of their character. And or you may take a few years before you decide to formalize a relationship with a Diksha Guru. When he comes, you take time to associate with him, and you know, you put that in your diary, 1 month spent with Guru, and you know, the next year, you know, 45 days, and you know, after 8 years, you know, 1 year, Guruji. I don't say that one has to rush into initiation. Nobody's saying that. But you should rush into accepting some guidance as far as how you will act in Krishna consciousness. Narhari Sarkar, yeah, that's an interesting book. Talks about many things there. Talks about reinitiation also. In other words, if Narhari Sarkar, who was an intimate associate of Lord Chaitanya, if Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was a Manjari, if Jiva Goswami, you know, one of the principal Mahajanas, if they mention the fact of reinitiation, it means that nobody is infallible, Maya is very strong, and there is always a chance of an accident. And therefore, we should be very sober in our choices, because when we make a choice, then we should have the integrity and the character to follow. In other words, the man must be potent and the woman must be fertile before there can be conception. The disciple has to be a bona fide disciple also. I've seen so many bad relationships because the disciple was a cheater. You know, he got into the, I got to get a name consciousness. Everybody, all my friends got names, you know. Promise anything, you know, get initiated. And then, you know, a year or two later, Why all these rules and regulations? What is all this? Well, you promised. Any other questions? You want to ask in Slovenian and have someone translate? Okay. Well, politics is a nasty word. Let's say diplomacy. That's a little softer. And diplomacy is necessary. As long as it's to help us become Krishna conscious, then it's not so bad. There's a rule in the material world. Our present civilization is a revolution of the sudras, or communistic. Make everybody one. But the actual rule is ahastani sahastanam. Those who have no hands, they're food for those with hands. Apadani chatushpadam. Those who have no feet or legs are food for those who have four legs. Falguni tatra mahatam. The general rule is, in the world, the general rule is, jivo jivasya jivanam. The weak are ruled by the strong. I don't mind being ruled by strong people. It's a rule. You can't avoid it. I'm glad. I know some people. I really lament that we lost some of our big leaders. It's really unfortunate because some of them were really heavy dudes. You know, they were powerful people, and even in the material sense. And for spreading Krishna consciousness, we need generals. We need dynamic people. It's unfortunate we lost some big soldiers. Bhagavan, Jayatirtha, Rameshwar, Bhavananda. You know, they were all charismatic, powerful, visionary type people. But they made some big mistakes too. The bigger they are, the harder they fall. So, but the general rule, even on every level, is that one living being is controlled by another. Diplomacy is to keep people peaceful. It's just a necessary fact of life. A little politics here and there. Krishna was a politician. He was a consummate politician. He's always trying to negotiate settlements. You know, like at the very end, he went to Duryodhana and tried to negotiate no war, promising this and, you know, like whatever. Mr. Chernomorden going to see Mr. Milosevic. There was no hope of any solution. Don't get too disturbed by, you know, what the material world is. You're only going to be here for such a short time anyway. And if your nature is to be diplomatic and political, then take up some service where you can do that. But if you're disturbed by those kind of things, then just stay away from it. Chant Hare Krishna. Be peaceful. Prasadam is always there on relatively on time. And, you know, there's no unemployment. There's lots of work to do. If you want to study philosophy or have a discussion or a debate, there's lots of opportunity for that. And even there's opportunities for a little recreation from time to time, recreation. But don't, people throw about these words as if, you know, everything's spoiled now because politics was brought in. You know, one person is saying it's politics and another person's looking at it in a totally different way. You know, because they didn't agree with me, they're doing politics against me. If they'd have just agreed with me, then I would have said that, wow, those guys are very reasonable. They're not into politics at all. Yeah, he said, Prabhupada says, at that time, the friendship, the time for being friends was over. They were formally friends. But when Arjuna accepted Krishna as his spiritual master, the time for intimate friendship was... I think that... We were reading about this just today. Maybe I was, or I thought someone was around me. Anyway, it's dangerous for the disciple to get too close. Although the spiritual master may extend friendship, and one can, you know, reciprocate with that a little bit, but the mood of awe and reverence is more conducive to a long-lasting, appropriate relationship, because the spiritual master has a different need and the disciple has a different need. The spiritual master, you know, some people may be expert at acting the role of a spiritual master, and that's probably something that's really important to learn. I suppose there's a kind of experience at that. But most of the spiritual masters I know, they're just trying to be devotees. You know, they were like that before they had disciples also. They're not new. They haven't changed. So they may be a little careless. Let's put it this way. I know that I'm a little careless sometimes. And it's not necessarily the, you know, a disciple, his need is the greatest. The spiritual master does not need disciples. The spiritual master needs to be a disciple. He needs to serve his spiritual master. One of his services may be to accept disciples, but the disciple really needs the spiritual master, because without pleasing the spiritual master, Krishna won't be pleased, and then you don't make progress. So the disciple has to be extra careful how he deals. I never heard of such a thing. I don't know. That's exaggeration. I can't believe that one. Any of you have a spiritual master who tells you you don't have to follow the four regs? Okay. Someone may... Someone may have a lot of difficulty with some particular thing. So, the spiritual master, after consideration and after consultation with his own God brothers or other leaders, he may come to the conclusion that the best solution for this person would involve a little relaxation of some things. But that's really an exception and not the rule. And you're also taking a chance when you do that. You're extending yourself because, you know, do you have the authority to do that? Just trying to think. I mean, I've had that experience myself. And here's one for you. Revealing this one may get me in trouble, but generally we understand that illicit sex means once a month, 5 days after the menstrual period. In other words, at the optimum time. No, pardon me. Did I say illicit sex? Licit, proper sex is 5 days after the menstrual period. At the optimum time for procreation, and anything other than that is illicit sex. And Prabhupada talks about it. Or not, he writes about it. But other of my godbrothers, two, said that Prabhupada told them, and if you know them, they're very good devotees, but very passionate. Prabhupada told them that illicit sex means sex with anyone else but one's wife. So, you know, he didn't write about that. I can't even verify that it's true. But these devotees are respectable persons, and I would suspect that it's true that he told it to them for a reason. He didn't tell that to others, and those others have to follow what Prabhupada wrote. We were reading about duty. One should accept what his duty is, even though it may be difficult to perform, rather than taking up another person's duty, which may be easier. And one of the reasons is that your duty has been given to you to challenge you to become strong in Krishna consciousness. The difficulty which you undergo to perform your duty will be very purifying for you. Householder life is an ashram, and it's very purifying if it's done according to Dharma Viruddha. And such a grihastha is called a grihastha brahmachari. And he's a highly respected, he's as good as a sannyasi. But, you know, there are examples where Prabhupada told certain devotees that if they were fully engaged in devotional service, that it wasn't so important that they missed some of their rounds. Now, that was at a particular time, at a particular place, with a particular person. You can't take that as a general rule. Again, someone may take the chance or the license to instruct one of his disciples in that way, and there's a risk there. Anybody who makes it a general rule has really got a problem. Any other? And it should be confirmed also. One should be very clear about it. In other words, just hearing this is not enough to take the license. One has got to get that instruction directly from his spiritual authority. And it's just like the brahmanas who killed cows in a fire sacrifice, saying mangsa. Prabhupada translates this word mangsa. Actually, it means different things, but he translates it as, I think there must be more Sanskrit words to it, but anyway, the Brahman whispers in the ear of the animal before killing it that I am killing you now, but in the future you will get an opportunity to kill me. So someone may give a license to someone that what they're doing is not condemnable, but they should also know that there may be some reaction. You may become more attached. You may create a lusty environment in your household, which will end up in fighting or something, and you pay a price there. Your mind is in anxiety. There's no, license, just like a householder has to pay a price for his license that he gets. Whatever you do, there's always, you may escape it being irreligious, but everything you do has some kind of a reaction. And if you want to be completely peaceful, then it's best to follow the highest standard perfectly. That's the best thing. If you want to be completely sure that your life will be peaceful and satisfying and that you'll achieve success in the end, then choose the high road. Don't take the low road. Take the high road. If you're always trying to find loopholes in the law, you know what a loophole is? Yeah? Ways you can go around, ways you can... Any other questions? Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.